Hey everyone, and welcome to Cold-Blooded Conversations. I am your host, Nathan, and today we are with Mr. Joe Pittman, who is the director and founder of the Florida Snake Bite Institute, and he is a trauma nurse who has written many protocols on dealing with snake bites. And Joe, the way I always start my interviews is asking you how you got involved with reptiles, but yours is kind of a four-part. How did you get involved in reptiles? How did you get involved in nursing? Which came first, and how did the paths intersect?
Actually, it's quite interesting because they all kind of intersected being in the military. I was a 8404 corpsman with the Marine Corps, one of their combat medics, essentially. So I was always with the Marines out in the field. And the first snake bite that I ever took care of was one of the Marines out in the field who crouched down somewhere he shouldn't have crouched down and took a bite from a pygmy rattlesnake. And so that kind of got me interested in the whole reptile aspect of it. And then when I got out of the military, I went into, I said, well, I got to take my medical profession somewhere or use it for something. So I had gotten my paramedic and I said, all right, well, what's the next step? The next step was nursing. So went and got my nursing license. And because I had done so much as far as trauma out in the field with the military and stuff like that, I started right in the emergency room. And just happened one night, we ended up having a puff adder bite come in. And I ended up being the only person there that knew what to do with snake bites. So it turned into actually the trauma surgeons there at the hospital consulting me to assist with snake bite management. And I mean, you're talking back in like the early 90s before there were a lot of people. Now we have more toxicologists and stuff that are very interested in snake bites and things like that. But those kind of guys weren't around back then. So I had actually learned from one of the old-timer docs in the ICU who literally pushed the old horse venom IV push for snake bites. So he kind of took me under his wing, and I ended up kind of becoming the hospital consultant for snake bites at that time.
So I've been reading that Crofab, which is the antivenom used for North American pit viper bites, is also sometimes used to treat species in the Bitis genus. And you mentioned the puff adder. So is Crofab effective for bites from the Bitis species, and how does it compare to the region-specific antivenoms?
It does say in their particular literature on the back of their antivenom sheet that it has been tested against some of the African species. I believe there was one article that came out in the medical journals that was addressing the use of Crofab versus some of the African species. I didn't get a chance to read the whole article on it. So I'm not really sure what the whole Crofab working on Bitis species or any other African species is really going to be until I see that paperwork. But they do state on the back of their antivenom page that it does work on Western species or African species.
So over your career, you have worked on over 500 snake bites.
Probably well over more than that. Probably not. We're probably up into the 600 or 700s.
And is that nationwide?
Yeah, and even a couple. I've helped with a couple of bites overseas as well.
So what would you say the most severe case you've come across is?
I've had a couple cobra bites that were pretty in-depth from different nausea species. But, of course, I've read the literature on some of the boom sling bites that we've had in the States, which have been very nasty bites. Taipan bites, which have been very nasty bites. So there are quite a few. I mean, It's hard to look back and say what the most difficult one was or what the most in-depth invasive type of bite was over that length of time. Each bite is just a new challenge. You can see something completely different from the previous bite.
Right. And the same a bite from the same snake could affect you much more differently than me. So it
Right.
definitely really is a
Right.
case by case. And as we said, I think it was last week with Jim and Kristen from the Kentucky Reptile Zoo, you could get bit by a snake and it could require 5 vials of antivenom, and I could get bit by the same snake and need 80 vials of antivenom. So it's
Right.
all on a case by case basis. So when we look at the medical field, we have specialists like cardiologists who know everything there is to know about the heart. But when we start getting into the emergency room and trauma personnel, you need to know a lot about a lot. So have you ever encountered any pushback from an MD or a physician on how to properly treat a snake bite?
Oh yeah. Well, because I'm just a registered nurse, you know, a lot of times I'll see pushback from some doctors that just don't know. They don't know my background. They don't know my history. And then you get some of the young doctors that just have that I'm a doctor complex and I know more than you and you know. So yeah, you always have that chance, but luckily I'm a lot of cases that I've dealt with, I haven't seen that kind of pushback. In fact, you know, like I said, I've had hospitals that have actually had me on the consultant list as one of the hospital consultants specifically for snake bites. So.
So you have published numerous articles in medical journals about snake bite, and one that sticks out to me the most is about 5 or 6 years old, about a guy. He wasn't bit, but he got hit right in the eyes by some spitting cobra venom. So can you walk us through what happened in that case?
Well, it was a patient that was brought into my hospital, and I was actually off that night and got a call at home saying, we've got an interesting case here. Can you come in and take a look at it? And they kind of gave me the background. And at that time, the hospital that I worked at was maybe 10, 15 minutes from my house, so it wasn't a long ride. And I went in there and they actually had anti-venom mixed up, and they were thinking they were going to give him Crofab for it. And I'm like, yeah, you guys are completely way off base here. Let's stop mixing the Crofab so we're not wasting all that money. And we're going to go a different route with this bite. Or it wasn't even a bite. Like I said, it was just a spitting exposure to the eyes.
So I've heard that getting hit by a spitting cobra in the eyes will cause permanent blindness. Is that true or is that just a myth?
Nothing that I've seen from any of the journals I've read, but I'm sure, you know, I'm sure at one point there had to have been cases where it's caused severe enough damage that it could potentially blind somebody if the damage is that extensive and untreated.
So that's probably poorer countries that don't have the same medical technology and equipment and facilities we have.
Right. Exactly.
So I'll post a link to the article, but walk us through what we did when this guy came into the emergency room after getting hit in the eyes by the spitting cobra.
Well, the first thing we did was we washed his eyes out with like copious amounts of normal saline. I mean, we just had bags and bags of saline running down into his eyes to get as much of it out as we could. And then it was just a situation of doing a Wood's lamp exam on his eyes and seeing if there were any corneal erosions or anything like that in the eye. And then treating that with pain medication and with the appropriate drops, you know, antibiotic drops. We also, you know, use some eye drops that help with the pain directly in the eyes themselves. So it's the biggest thing is getting that rinse going through the eyes, though. and rinsing most of it out as possible.
And the patient made a full recovery, right?
Oh yeah, had a complete recovery, no lasting damage whatsoever.
So it's obviously a personal choice if someone wants to keep a venomous snake as a quote unquote pet, but it's also their responsibility to have the proper safety measures in place. Now, general public cannot have foreign antivenom imported, so it's important for people to know where they have it. So if someone were to get bit by their exotic or domestic venomous snake as a pet, what do they do?
Well, obviously, it's going to depend. Is it a native bite or is it a foreign exotic species? What would normally happen is a hospital would call poison control. Poison control would look up that particular species, see that it needs an exotic antivenom, something that's not produced here in the United States. And they go to what's called the antivenom index, which basically is a list of zoos and what antivenoms they may have on stock at those zoos. And they would normally try to find the closest to antivenom source and call that source. And then, of course, you start working on how are you going to get that antivenom to the hospital. Has it got to be something that can just be driven to the hospital? Has it got to be flown from another state, which has all its own little drawbacks and things like that. So one of the big pushes that I know Kristen and me started quite a while ago was the push to kind of get private keepers into getting their own antivenom, where they would get their VBIND permit in order to import it through, into the US. And that way they'd have their own antivenom on stock, which would cut down on that whole waiting for antivenom to get to the hospital. So that's really the big push now. Some docs have connections with certain zoos and they know that, there might be a zoo close by them that has certain species, where they can get antivenom quickly from them. In Florida, we're quite well stocked because we have both of the antivenom banks here in Sumter County and down in Miami-Dade County. So we have a lot of access to the foreign antivenoms here in Florida. Unfortunately, a lot of other states don't have that. I know at one time there were a group of us that had gone to Venom Week, myself, some other keepers and some toxicologists, and we had talked about trying to get some kind of thing set up nationally where we could get banks in other states too. So, but it kind of fell by the wayside. So now we've been doing more pushing for the private keepers to have their own antivenoms.
So I've been running into a story the past couple weeks that there is a issue with the Thai Red Cross anti-venom supplies. So what's going on with that?
Yeah, apparently the United States government is just concerned about is there a potential contamination of the antivenom from that similar equine type thing that happened with the African antivenoms. So essentially, they're kind of holding antivenom shipments back until they can clear them and make sure that they don't have any of that contamination. How long the hold is going to be, it's hard to say. They haven't really put any kind of time frame on that hold.
So, enlighten us a little bit about the AZA antivenom index.
The antivenom index, like I said, is actually through the AZA, but poison control centers have access to it as well. And there's kind of like a mutual agreement with the zoos through poison control that if there is a bite, the zoos on a compassionate basis may send antivenom to kind of help out. Of course, they run into a problem then too, because then that zoo is left without that anti-venom if one of their keepers should take a bite. And then the other problem is almost 100% of the time, the zoos never get reimbursed for that anti-venom or never get it resupplied. And they have to spend money out of their budgets to go and send overseas to get the shipments again.
And we were
So.
told with our anti-venom, if we end up giving it out to a victim, we cannot charge more than what we paid for it. And so we've been talking a lot about anti-venom. Give us the quick synopsis of how it's made, because I don't think we've discussed it on this channel yet.
Well, originally, what they would do, the original concept was they would take and immunize horses with a dose of venom from a particular species or multiple species, and they would gradually keep increasing that. And then, as the horse would build up antibodies to that venom, then they would take and they would draw back, blood samples or whatever, spin them down and get it to a point where they could take what they need from the sample and then convert it over into an anti-venom. And then when Crofab came along, they started doing the immunization of sheep because they found that it was a little bit closer to the human body as far as reaction goes. There were a lot of allergic responses to the equine or the horse serums, just because, some people have those types of allergies. So, Crofab came out and you started using the sheep and you saw far less of those types of reactions. And then, of course, your foreign anti-venoms pretty much are all made from the horses still. So, you kind of have to watch now for reactions when you're using those foreign antivenoms because of the equine use.
So, Joe, you have compiled dozens and dozens and dozens of bite protocols, not only for snakes, but lizards, centipedes, spiders, tarantulas, pretty much anything with venom. And the amount of research that has gone into these protocols is massive. And I can tell you when I opened the book, because I've bought everything you have to offer, I've encountered species that I've never even heard of before. And again, the research is incredible. So, what inspired you to do all of this research and put these bite protocols out on the market for people?
Well, originally, one of the, I used to belong to some of the older herpetology websites that, were around, like the, Southeastern Hot Herp Society and things like that, back in the day. And one of the things that you used to constantly hear from people who were bitten by snakes was about how the doctors didn't know anything as far as the treatment went, or they got inappropriate treatment. And of course, the biggest one was, everybody came in with the rattlesnake bite or a copperhead bite or something like that. They'd end up walking out with a fasciotomy. So back in 2009, when I created the Florida Snake Bite Institute, one of the things I decided was I wanted to make protocols or a resource for physicians so that they knew what the proper treatment for the patient was and things that weren't appropriate, like fasciotomies for a lot of bites.
So let me stop you right there. We've used that term fasciotomy twice. So, in the layman's terms, what is it and what is it supposed to be done for?
Well, essentially in your muscles, you have what are called compartments. And what happens is if there's a traumatic injury or a snake bite, those compartments tend to start to fill up and expand to the point where they become very tight. And that pressure can cause, problems where it causes the nerve to die and, nerves to die within the compartments. So what they do is they take and they surgically open those compartments up. So you can, let's say if you're bitten on the arm, you can end up with a surgical opening from your wrist all the way up to almost your shoulder. And it would be left open and then cared for postoperatively, bandage changes and things like that. And they would take out any dead tissue that they saw in those compartments. With snake bites, though, that pressure that's caused, we have found, or they have found through research, that that pressure is only mimicked with snake bites. It'll look like, there's extensive pressure being put on those compartments. And one of the things that we recommend is if you're going to go that route and you're thinking about a fasciotomy, is that you check those pressures in the compartments first before you start thinking about cutting somebody open, because you may not see those elevated pressures in those different compartments. So we tell them that, and we also tell them that before you start cutting, if you think that there's pressure there, to increase the elevation of the limb and then increase, give them more antivenom first to see if that resolves that swelling in those, compartments. And we try to prevent that cutting open at all costs. Unfortunately, you get a lot of surgeons, or I've had a few surgeons where they've said, well, I can tell what compartment syndrome looks like just by looking at the arm. And if you're that good, God bless you, because a lot of times those compartments don't have those elevated measurements that warrant their arm being cut open. So I've actually got into fights with some vascular surgeons over that, where they've tried to cut patients open that don't need it.
I mean, I've heard that the fasciotomy is ineffective in snake bite, I think, in like 98% of cases.
Yes, exactly. It's a very, very, it just doesn't need to be done in the majority of cases.
So I have one of your snake bite protocols pulled up on the computer right now for the Bothrops genus, and it starts out with descriptions of the different species and some great photographs. Then it goes down to the venom composition and the clinical effects, and then medical management, which includes everything from blood work to x-rays of what needs to be done if you're bit by that species of snake. Then we have a list of all of the antivenom that can be used to treat bites from that snake, a list of snake bite experts in the United States that can be called for assistance, and finally, a reference list of the places you got all of the information you used in the protocol. So, how can we, the public, get copies of these protocols for their personal use?
Easiest way is actually just to contact me. If you have Facebook, to just contact me directly through Facebook, and just send me a personal message through Facebook, and I'll ask you what you need, or what you're looking for, and then we'll arrange it that way. The other way that I can be contacted is through my email, which is JoeVenom, RN, 0220 at Juno, JUNO.com.
And I'll put links in the description so everyone can find Joe pretty easy. And you have full books and single bite protocols too, right?
Right. Yeah, I have individual protocols that you can get, or if you just want to get the large book that's got a large number of protocols in it and covers a whole lot of different species, then there is a book that you can get as well.
So, what is the cost for the single species protocols right now?
Singles right now are $7 plus mailing, which usually, if it's like one individual protocol, it starts out at like $1.60 as far as mailing goes, because you got to love our post office.
And that is a bargain at that price for anyone who is going to keep a venomous reptile, be it at home or in a zoo. So you know exactly what to do, so your physician knows exactly what to do if and when that day ever comes that you get bit.
And that was one of the things when I first started out, I said to myself, I'm not making these to make a lot of money. So I didn't, I mean, people have told me I can charge far more than what I charge for the protocols, but that was never really my intent. My intent was to make sure that the venomous community had a resource to ensure that they had proper treatment. So really, I mean, all the $7 covers is just essentially the materials that it takes me to make the protocols.
So how much research goes into creating a protocol?
It depends. If it's just like an individual species, I can usually do pretty much all the research I need within 2-3 days. If we're talking like one of the more extensive multi-species protocols, then it's going to take me a little bit longer because I'm going to look to see if there's any comparisons and things like that between different species venom. And then I try to make sure that I put that as far as up in that venom section of the protocol, what those differences might be or what there may be a difference as far as some type of effect that a certain species may cause versus another species. But I mean, you're talking, I've put a lot of money into getting the journals and things like that to research for the protocols. And then I put in a lot of my time when I worked at Poison Control for them.
One of the sources the first one actually is toxinology.com. It does not look like they have been updated in a long time. Do you know what the status of their site is?
I think there may have been some minor updates that they put in as far as different species go. But I'm not sure what their status is as far as putting in a full update. They of course give you really nice basic information about the species, and a very generic basic what you should do immediately for a bite. And they do give you the anti-venom, but you know, I tried to use them as just kind of like a basic outline for some stuff. Of course, I felt that you had to put more into the protocols than just that very generic basic stuff that they put in. But of course, I did give, I credit them for being a source.
So what is the message of the Florida Snake Bite Institute that you want all of the listeners to hear and know?
Well, my mission with the Florida Snake Bite Institute is to improve the prevention and the treatment of snake bites. Obviously, the first thing I'd like to do is prevention. So when I go out and I do a lot of my community events, that's what I'm focused on, is more the prevention aspect of let's prevent people from trying to get bit. And even, some of the things I put out for keepers, like, my position statements that I put out on Facebook. I try to put in a lot of things as far as ways that we can prevent bites in the venomous community, by using the appropriate tools when we're handling snakes and things like that. And then the other aspect is going into the treatment of snake bites once we're already there. Let's make sure that we've got the appropriate treatment for that bite, and that we're doing what the patient needs. That's the right thing the patient needs.
So do you have a favorite species of snake?
Oh my God. I think if I had to say any favorite species, it would probably be the king cobra. And just to me, I mean, my whole thing with them is when you look at a king cobra, it just looks like it's showing an intelligence when it's looking at you.
Oh, they are.
It just has that look to it, like it's, a wise old wisdom or intelligence.
I mean,
the
they
snake.
Are super intelligent snakes. I mean, all cobra species are, but the king cobra, I mean, I could go on for hours about king cobras and how awesome they are. But I mean, they actually have pretty good eyesight and can see a human silhouette at about 300 feet. That's pretty impressive. And they can be very vocal, and they actually have a growl.
Yeah,
to
I have
grow.
heard the growl.
Really?
Yep.
So I have not, because our enclosure is obviously sealed, so you can't hear him, but you can see the muscles moving in the chest when he's standing up. And I'm not going to stick a microphone in there to do a
Oh, come
recording
on.
session. So, is there anything else you'd like to add before we conclude this podcast
No,
session
I
today?
mean, I guess one of my biggest messages as far as the venomous community again is use the appropriate tools. One day I'd like to say I'm going to be out of business.
Yep.
And the way to do that is by, people using the appropriate tools and using the appropriate safety measures to avoid being bitten.
All right. Well, Joe Pittman, thank you so much for joining us today. Joe, you are a trauma nurse and the director and founder of the Florida Snake Bite Institute. I have some links in the description so you can go contact Joe about buying his protocols and also some of the articles that he's written. So we will see you next week with part one of an amazing interview with the one and only Mr. Romulus Whitaker.